Good evening, Council. This is the January 9th Council briefing. We have three scheduled items to go over with you tonight. The first one that we're going to talk about is with regards to Public Utility Regulatory Policy Act standards that require our consideration. As you're all aware, Beaches Energy Services is our electric utility, of which you are effectively the Board of Directors for that utility. So I'm going to turn it over to Director Putnam, who's going to talk to you a little bit about what purpose standards are, why we're required to consider them, and then talk to you about what these are in particular. So with that, Alan, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act, PURPA, is part of the National Energy Act. It was meant to promote energy efficiency and promote greater use of domestic energy. It was created like back in 73 during the energy crisis. So every so many years, PURPA puts forth some new standard, and you have to review that standard, bring it to your board, commission, council, whatever you have, and have those, and put them up for consideration. This year, two additional standards have been added to PURPA, and they now must be considered by yourselves. While the PURPA standards themselves, they're not mandatory, but PURPA does mandate that all utilities hold a public hearing to consider whether to adopt the standards. The new PURPA standards adopted under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act for this year were demand response and demand flexibility. So that really is, you know, controlling people's water heaters or ACs, controlling their, you know, making it, it's complex, but that's one way you can do that. Or having customers that are interruptible. That's another, one of the two biggest ways you can control people's consumption. Number two is electric vehicle charging programs. They're pushing adoption of these programs. A copy of these two standards are attached to the memo, and I know you assuming they received those.
Yes.
So generally, PURPA requires that each applicable utility to consider the standards and make a determination on whether it's appropriate to implement each standard within these deadlines, taking in consideration purposes. So here we are. So except as otherwise indicated, the procedures used by the utility for consideration and termination of the standards shall be those established by the utility. So in this case, we bring it to the council brings it to the public. So in considering the standards, we must comply with both the procedural requirements of PURPA, which we just discussed, and then any particular hearing requirements established by the city and the Florida public meeting laws. So applicable utilities must begin consideration of the standard hearing date for such consideration by November 15th, which we've done. We actually set the meeting once we were made aware of the standard and our requirement to review it. And then I don't know how much detail you want to go into on these two standards, but the standards for consideration are demand response and demand flexibility. Each utility shall promote the use of demand response and demand flexibility practices by commercial, residential, and industrial consumers to reduce electricity consumption during periods of unusually high demand, which is, in our case is generally between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. in the summertime. There are some times in the winter when it's really a morning issue, but it really has to be a pretty extreme temperature for us to even have a problem with capacity. So in this case, we're a non-regulated electric utility. There's two. One is, you know, for regular authority. We are the non-regulated utility. Non-regulated utility may establish rate mechanisms for the timely recovery of costs of promoting demand response. So some utilities will say they'll do a water heater program where they'll monitor your water heater, and during certain parts of the day, when it's high demand, they will shut off your water heater. That's what they're talking about, demand response. So they have control. So you have to have the systems and hardware and everything in place to be able to do that. That's part of this, and you can recover those costs. Utilities such as like FPL, they actually have those built into their rates. They have a energy conservation cost built into their rate. We don't have that luxury. We have to just roll it into the regular rate. The second standard, electric vehicle charging programs. Each state shall consider measures to promote greater electrification of the transportation sector, including the establishment of rates. And then there's a suggested approach. This was provided by our FMPA attorneys. Begin consideration or set a hearing date. We've done that already. There's no prescribed method to begin consideration. However, it is recommended that the City Council officially recognize the standards and announce that consideration has begun. Staff recommends setting a date for public hearing on the standards during this briefing if possible. And then the last bit of consideration, there's a little more to that. So, if possible, you may set any special procedures for public participation. Example, you may accept written comments from the public before the hearing. You may take comments at the meeting only. That's up to you as a council. What is the filing period? Will public participation be limited to oral presentations at the hearing? Those things are all up to you. After that hearing, we will review the standards. You would recommend begin reviewing the new standards internally to determine whether they are in our best interest or not. And then third, hold the public hearing. On the date established, hold your public hearing to consider adoption and allow participation at the hearing. You must allow participation, but it's up to you how you allow that participation. And then finally, make a written determination. So that determination will be made by the council, not by me. So I'm sure that written is made within the applicable deadlines. We have until November 23 to finish. If your utility opts not to adopt the standard, we have to include a written determination and explanation for rejecting the standard, which that's typically what happens because it's very costly. But that is up to you totally. Council direction requested is questions you need to ask and answer for yourselves is when should a public hearing be set? Will you accept comments from the public before the hearing or only comments at the hearing? And if accepting comments in advance, to whom should they be sent with what filing period? And that's the recommendation. It's a lot. I know it's a lot.
You set a public hearing, that y'all have set a public hearing date.
This started the process.
The consideration.
But you need to have you need to hold a public hearing for the public to attend at a future date.
Alan, since we were required to start the process,
yes,
or at least
the deadline
to start the process back in November, so we actually made the determination to have a briefing tonight, January 9th, to start that discussion.
Okay. So it starts the clock.
Do you have a recommendation on the date that you'd like to have the public meeting?
I think if we schedule anything for, say, 90 days out or longer, that's probably adequate in terms of holding a public hearing sometime in the spring.
I'm fine with the summer, too.
And so, you know, if you guys want to give us, we don't have to pick a specific date, but I think if you give us a window within which to hold the hearing and give us some guidance as to how you'd like that public participation, we can take that back and formalize it and send that out to the public so they at least know what the period will be that they can respond if you're going to allow comments in writing in advance, where they're sent to, how we package them up and send them to council for you to look at prior to any public hearing that we actually hold. So we're really looking for your direction on how that public hearing should be structured and a time frame to hold it within.
I mean, I don't see that there's any reason to do it quickly. I mean, I think sometime like this summer or something's fine with me. As for the comments, I'm fine just taking comments at that meeting. And those are the only two things that we really need to, I mean, those are just kind of where I'm leaning for it.
Well, if somewhere we accept comments at the meeting, do we want it to be, do we have to decide if it's 3 minutes or longer?
You can give us some suggestions as to how long you'd like the public to be allowed to speak during that time frame. If you want, we can keep it standardized what we do with courtesy of the floor now, 3 minutes per speaker. Mm-hmm. Looking for some guidance.
Can we do, I would do that with like a 30-minute cap or put a cap on it. And then we could either reduce it. But I mean, I don't see a ton of people showing up to discuss this.
Sir, with respect to public hearings, it's disfavored to cap the public hearings. So we could do cap courtesy of the floor, some other types of things, but not the public hearings.
Okay. I'm fine with just the normal procedure.
So just if you have questions, further questions, or wish to discuss this further, please let me know. These will require significant cost to do either one.
I have a question for you. So since you've been with Beaches Energy historically, how many times have we either adopted or not adopted, or is there a combination of what the standards?
I haven't done this since I was at JEA more than 8 years ago. It's the last time the standards came forward that I had to address.
And what were those standards?
It was related to efficiency. I can't recall exactly. We didn't adopt them because we already do conservation, right? We already promote conservation, so we didn't adopt them at the time.
Another question would be that when we talk about time frame, if we do not adopt the standard, then there has to be a written determination with an explanation. So,
correct.
Asking you, what kind of time frame do you need in order to be able to get that completed before the deadline?
20
as well?
Minutes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I didn't know. All right.
No, it costs too much.
just because, like, for example, the EV charging program, that's not going to be anything that would make us money. We would lose money on it based on a bit. Just from what I've seen as far as how many times the chargers get used when we did have them in operation, I don't see how we can promote it any further than it's already promoted, and it would be beneficial to our ratepayers. I don't see that. But that's, we can discuss that anytime if you want to sit down. We've been through the data.
We'll go through that.
Yeah, we'll get through that in a public meeting. This is your determination.
This is just setting we're just setting a date. And
I have a feeling you'll get some comments from, like, probably EV developers.
Short of sounding silly, what is, you said, we'll accept written comments, like, versus emails, or?
I think it's either written, either you'll take, you determine, you can say, hey, we'll take them either via email or in writing, or we'll take public comments and, you know, live public comments. It's really up to you
Could
guys.
Could we not do both? I mean, like,
you don't have to do both.
Oh, you don't?
You can set parameters if you want to say, you know, people can start submitting written or email communication 30 days in advance of the public hearing, or you'll only take comments that are in person at the public hearing.
I don't mind some emails ahead of time, because in case somebody comes up with some grand idea or something, you know, something that makes it different, that moves a needle. And I would like to see, you know, to me, I don't care for the written. An email would be great, and if it was 30 days in advance, that would give us time to get some feedback from the community.
Can I ask
sure.
Council's advice on that? Because I want to make sure we're consistent with what we normally do.
Okay.
That would make sense.
So it's our practice to do in-person testimony for public hearings. We only accepted public comment by writings during COVID. Mm-hmm. There was one instance post-COVID where we accepted public comment, and then there's that expectation that the comments will be read. And so I would say that it would be better for us to just do in-person testimony, especially since really there's no action being requested of council. It's just a public consideration of these standards.
Well, there you go.
That's just a suggestion, mind you.
I like that suggestion.
There seemed to be a consensus to hold this maybe the beginning of summer and to do comments in person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think that answers the questions we needed for tonight.
If any of you have
questions on those two standards between now and the setting of that public hearing date, feel free to reach out to Alan. He'll try to talk to you about the pros and cons of them or the impacts to Beaches Energy if we were to adopt them. Thank you. Well, that was item number one. So we can move on now to item number two. I will ask, I believe, Ashley to come up to the table. We need to talk about some direction for solid waste rate structure going forward. At a previous council meeting, council approved the contract, which talked about global revenues and expenditures associated with the enterprise fund known as solid waste. But one of the things we need to do is take a look at what the rate structure should be going forward in order to make sure that we have an appropriate fund balance within the Solid Waste Enterprise Fund, as well as appropriately collect revenues to pay for the expenditures that will be occurring over the duration of the contract. So with that being said, I will turn it over to Ashley, who will talk to you about some of the options that we've put together for consideration of council.
Well, good evening. So I have the possibly unfun job of kind of talking you through the different rates that we are looking at for the Solid Waste Fund. As Mike said, the new contract is significantly more expensive than our previous contract, so we need to adjust the rates to kind of recoup the costs that we're going to be incurring. So we have prepared four different options for council to consider before we bring the rate resolution in front of you, because there's a couple different ways to approach this. The first option is to move rates to where they need to be today and then introduce an annual CPI adjustment for the next 4 years after that for the 5-year term of the contract. So that's option one, which is kind of moving kind of a significant increase immediately upon execution of the transfer service, which would be March 1st to start the rate change. And then CPI has been trending around 3.5% over the last 5 years, and so that's what this kind of example is showing. The second option is to do kind of a 3-year even step up for the customer and then introduce the CPI adjuster in years 4 and 5. I'll go through all the options and then kind of talk about the pro and con. The third option is a 3-year tiered step up, which is kind of a heftier increase on year 2 or year 1, less increase on year 2, another increase on year 3, and then move with CPI. And the fourth option is just to move the rates where we think they need to be for the duration of the 5-year contract. So the options 1 and 4 are kind of a significant, I'm sorry, yes sir?
On option 4, how does that relate to current from a percentage standpoint?
It's doubling.
100%.
Yeah. So that's a significant increase to our customers. But in the 5th year of the contract, if we go with option 4, the rate is actually lowest because we're taking kind of the adjustment at the beginning and then we hold steady and have a consistent rate over the 5-year contract. So the customers can expect each month what they'll see on their bill will be the same for the next 60 months of the contract. So options 1 and options 4 are the most significant increase immediately, and options 2 and 3 are a step for a customer to kind of ease into the higher rate. But what I wanted to call council's attention to is kind of the impact to fund balance over time. So years 2 and 3, while it'd be kind of a softer increase to our customers, it would be a reduction of, on option 2, $1.8 million in the first year, and option 3, $1.1 million. The sanitation fund can afford to go down $1 million, but I will caution, the fund balance reserve we keep in sanitation, we keep enough to cover one hurricane event, like $1.5 million, which is what it cost us the last 2 hurricane events. We would have those funds ready available. In options 2 and 3, if we were to have back-to-back hurricanes like we had with Matthew and Irma, the solid waste fund would be in a position where it would have to borrow from the general fund, which is something that can be done, and it would recover in years 3, 4, 5. So that's the vulnerability of choosing options 2 and 3. We've had many, many years without any hurricanes, without any debris costs. You know, we might be so fortunate in the next 8, 5 years, or we might not. So kind of a softer increase to our customers would kind of, we would accept the risk of perhaps we wouldn't have enough fund balance to cover a hurricane if it were to occur.
But in 3, that's going to improve over time.
Yes, in options 2 and 3, you see in the later years we're recovering that back.
Right.
And we're building the reserves back up, but we end with option 3 with a residential rate of $38 and option 2 with a residential rate of $40. So we have to go actually up higher in the rates to recover what we're not collecting in the first couple of years.
But the biggest risk for option number 3 is only basically in the first year as far as that $1 million
yeah.
is concerned.
Yes, sir.
I personally like 3 because, you know, to me, you know, it's a hit, but it's not a full-on hit, and it improves over time. The only risk is that first year, I think. That's just my personal opinion.
What I was going to say was that when you mentioned the recovery of the fund in years 3, 4, and 5, that's barring further weather events.
Correct.
So that's why I kind of, I think about, like, the first year we get a big hit, we borrow from the general fund. The next year we get hit twice again, we borrow from the general fund.
Well, the first year we wouldn't have to borrow against the general fund because it would only be if we get hit a second time. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah.
Oh, this is what I guess. I worry about the frequency of these things coming. I think they're going to continue for the next duration of our lives. That's just a thought there.
Is that cost recoverable from FEMA afterwards?
Yes, and we have, in both Matthew and Irma, typically you get 75% of your incurred costs from the federal government and 12.5% from the state, mm-hmm. and then the city absorbs the remaining 12.5%. Yeah. But for both events, FEMA agreed to increase their reimbursement rate for debris. But in Matthew, it took us 2 years to get those funds back.
I was going to ask you, historically, it's been quite some time to recoup those funds, hasn't it?
Yeah. 2 years after Matthew did we start getting reimbursed for debris. And then for Irma, they were much faster, but it was still a year after we had incurred all of the costs.
So I guess my question is, where does that, you know, if we need that $1 million, where do we get it from if we're short?
So we could borrow from the general fund and repay over time, or we would kind of come back to you and have a conversation about what the appetite is to increase rates to recover that.
Okay.
What contributes to the fund? Is it strictly these fees?
Yes.
And that's it? Nothing else goes into it?
We earn interest income on our fund balance, but that's really kind of insignificant. The primary revenue into the fund is our user fees. The residential and commercial garbage rates.
And then the only expenditures are to Waste Pro or debris for hurricanes.
Street sweeper is also part of sanitation. So it is exactly what you said. It is the debris, or it is the Waste Pro and the debris contract, but it also includes the street sweeper and then some personnel that manage our end of the sanitation.
So the expenses in the five-year forecast, we look at it to be about 88% direct contract costs and 12%, you know, personnel and operating expenditures.
Okay.
With option four, I'm guessing at the end of year five, we're going to have to readdress this again. Where all of these, we're going to have to readdress this again.
Yeah, I think when the contract comes up for renewal or a new RFP, I would anticipate kind of coming back and having the same conversation.
Yeah.
Hopefully not as significant, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm a big fan of everything being the same, and I was looking at option four, but at the same time, I look at that deficit at the end of year five, which starting a big deficit. Mm-hmm. So then movement after that into year six and beyond would cover fixing that deficit plus whatever planned future deficit we would have.
It may be a bigger sawtooth, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's where I worry about, just thinking out loud.
Well, when you look at number three, and then you're only at 12.5% in that third year.
Three.
Yeah, right.
I'm not real thrilled about number two, though. Year five, you're at 40. At $40, I mean, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there any options on here that you'd like to eliminate?
I don't like four.
Yeah, I don't like four either. That big deficit on the back end, not knowing what comes after 5 years.
Yeah.
I think a big deficit going into an unknown puts us already out of pocket.
But if I could just point out with option four, the net effect at 5 years is we would be reducing fund balance by $496,000. And so although in year five we're going down, in years one and two we're actually going up. So in the last column on all of them, it's kind of the five-year impact to the fund. And we looked at it and the fund, moving the fund down by $500,000, we felt like there was room enough to do that with our current fund balance and maintain the reserves for debris and the reserves for operating expenditures.
But if we did the one-time adjustment with a 3.5, we did option four with a 3.5, then we pretty much have no impact to the five-year impact. There would be no five-year impact, right? If you add the one the one rate adjustment and added the escalator.
Correct. Yeah, option one is kind of the smoothest impact to fund balance over time.
Well, number four.
And number four, you would kind of be moving your fund balance up the first 2 years and then down years.
But if you but if you modified option four for the one-time adjustment and the CPI,
yeah,
then that's really what's happening.
Yes.
So if we want to minimize that, then do we have to use that CPI? I mean,
well, so I would recommend the CPI that we use for our customers' rates be the exact same CPI that we're using in our contract.
Okay. Yep.
Right now we've got some language in there that says we'll do an annual CPI and a biannual fuel adjustment. So I would want to kind of parity between those two.
Is there any program for, like, for utilities or people that can't afford it to apply for assistance? I mean,
yes.
There is, right?
Yeah, so we have a CARE program. Any of our residential customers that are experiencing any kind of economic hardship, right now our program affords up to $500 per household per year, but recognizing that our electric rates have been moving up because of the cost of power, staff is intending to bring forward to council within the next month or two, increasing that cap from 500 to 600.
Mm-hmm. And that could potentially absorb this for the people that are most in need.
Yes, sir.
Do y'all have a recommendation that y'all prefer, or is it all?
Yeah, well, that's the next question.
It really comes down to risk versus impact. Options two and three, as you heard the finance director say, have a little bit more volatility in the first couple of years if we have back-to-back events, because we've got a larger deficit that's occurring. But then again, options one and four, which try to make massive adjustments at the front end, result in massive impacts in those first couple of years. So this was our best guess at trying to at least put options in front of you that cover the gamut. I think from our perspective, we could live with any of the four. That's what we said coming into this. It really comes down to the risk versus fiscal impact to the residents.
Two just bothers me because we're agreeing to a 300% rate increase,
right,
in, you know, over 5 years.
Right. I don't like two either.
So it sounds like two and four have been eliminated from consideration.
But really, I mean, but four at 33, you know, you got three, mm-hmm, is almost to that rate in year two. I mean, it's not.
Yep. Mm. Would council have any, I know that it was mentioned up front, would council have any heartburn if we prepared the resolution around option three? Nope. Have we ever provided two options? Presented two resolutions for consideration?
We have not, but there can always be the first time.
It sounds like council is considering, it sounds like your concern is between one and three at this point in terms of the structure to go with. One is definitely a lot more stable when you look at the fund balance changes at the bottom of each of the years, one through five.
I mean, it just seems like there's something that could give the city a little less exposure, like somewhere between one and three.
And if you'd like us to go back and do a hybrid between the two, that's a direction you can give us as well. Is, you know, we like the idea of doing somewhere between a 55% and a 93% increase in year one, and then taper down from there. You can give us that direction, and we can put that together.
Well, it seems on the five-year impact. Well,
we would go back and recrunch the numbers.
Yeah.
But we needed to at least have a starting point for discussion purposes.
Possible to do the hybrid?
Yeah, like 65 to 70% in year one.
Yeah,
so like option three with a slighter increase in year one. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, a little bit more, and then we'll spread it out more.
I think a hybrid might, if I'm thinking about it, might be an increase over a 2 year window with the 3, 4, and 5 just being CPI. And so I think if I run that scenario, I can arrive somewhere between these two. But I can also look at it with a year two higher than the 25%.
So I can put both of those options together and bring them back.
I like it.
Okay.
Would you like us to bring it back for another briefing? Or would you like us to bring it back in the form of a resolution for consideration?
I think resolution for consideration. So we can get moving on it.
I'm fine with that too.
Okay. I can do that.
So we're going to look at somewhere between a 55 and 93 in year one, and then a taper down in year two, and then fall into the CPI for 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
As these rates were not adjusted since, I think it was 1996 was what was on the sheet, are there any other, is there anything else in the wind that might come back and we might see this down the road? And if so, what are we doing to address
with regards to other utility rates?
Yes, utility rates, fees, things that are going to be pushed on the taxpayers that are not going to be comfortable and happy for anybody out there, including everybody at this table who's, homeowners and going to be paying these fees as well. And what I mean, my thought is that had we had we addressed this like 96 to I think it was that's a long time. So yeah. Where what can we do to nip this in the butt where it's not but
well, I think getting a CPI involved in the formula going forward is a good thing. City Council years ago did that with the Water Sewer Fund. They adjusted the rates and put a CPI into effect to govern those rates going forward. And what we've found is that CPI has been, to some extent, a set it and forget it. Even through this uptick in inflation that we've seen over the last 12 plus months, the CPI has moved with it, and that's been a good thing. We have not had to make any adjustments to Water Sewer. The electric utility rates and the stormwater rates are two that we will need to be looking at next. The electric rates we talked about with Director Putnam, and I think we shared with Council going back several months ago, that we need to make holistic changes to that structure as well. The stormwater rates, similar situation. It's been a few decades. When stormwater was put in place, it has never been adjusted since. It's been the same flat rate of $5 per ERU, and there's been a whole lot of development in the city since then. And our capital costs and operating costs are all going up. So this is one of the three utilities that we hope to be looking at before the end of this year. The next one we'll be starting will likely be, I think, the energy.
Which further supports, to me, further supports Tier 3, where our citizens aren't getting an immediate impact of such a great increase that they're kind of, easing into it, if you will.
What about the fuel? I mean, there's that issue too, that the fuel could end up, does that
come up natural gas?
Well, the cost of fuel in the contract, it could impact what we're paying, right?
So it can and it will, because it has the, like I said earlier, the biannual fuel impact, but the rate from the contractor, I think 88% of the rate is the base rate and 12% is the fuel adjustment. So it will move, but it won't have the significant impact that the CPI will have. So it is something to keep in mind, especially we had this kind of run up in gas prices. And so in a 6-month window, we could see an increase. But when it comes back down, we get to adjust it right back. So when we kind of prepared our projections, we considered that. And came to the conclusion that it wasn't enough to kind of move the fund balance to the impact that the CPI would.
Okay.
So I think you got the direction you're looking for. We'll look to do a hybrid somewhere between option one and option three. First 2 years of adjustment, and then slide into a CPI after that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was item two. Now I get to call up Jason for item three. We're going to talk Gonzales Park one more time. Hopefully the final time.
Good evening, Council. So the last time I think we simply ran out of time before we could reach a resolution, and I'm hoping tonight we can. If I can just sum up where we were last time, we were on a path to either eliminating volleyball courts or eliminating just one of them, and then we talked about whether we're going to keep the exercise station centrally located or dispersed throughout the park. And I think the mayor also had some concerns that the two concepts had varied in the size of the athletic field. I hope we dealt with that in the cover memo. If we didn't, I'm here to answer any questions. So tonight, we're asking specifically about the volleyball. Do we keep both of them, one of them, or none of them? Staff's preference is that we eliminate both of them simply because we don't see the economics. There's no demand that, you know, exceeds the supply, if you will. Should there be that, you know, in the future, we have capacity at South Beach Park to add courts. We've also got a court at Oceanfront Park that we can refurb and upgrade, and then there's plenty of courts along the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, like that would be our preference. But then again, it's your decision.
I'm in favor of that, personally.
I am too.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean,
there's your consensus.
You got it.
So what we were able to do was speak with the consultant. Unfortunately, he didn't get us a rendering in time to meet the deadline of this briefing, but we did receive something from him this afternoon. I'd like to share that with council. What he did do in talking, I know, Sandy, you were in favor of moving the pickleball courts more centrally located because of the noise. I think the mayor was also of that opinion. So I want to pass this out and have a look at it. It does include the one volleyball court, but since we've reached consensus and won't go back there, we'll make sure that he eliminates it.
And if there was, I mean, I would want them there. I would want volleyball courts there if there wasn't a substantial amount in the community already, and we're not.
And we have
people from playing volleyball.
And we have room for growth right at Sunshine Park.
Right. I mean, I am a big volleyball fan, though.
So as you can see, the pickleball courts has moved more towards the middle of the park. We've shifted the playground station, which was right behind the restrooms, basically keeping it where it is now, but substantially increasing the size. If I can just remind council, going back to the very beginning of this project, you know, we conducted, I'm gonna say, 4, maybe 5 surveys from the community, and the results were consistent throughout those surveys. The community wanted, not particularly in the order, but they wanted shade, they wanted restrooms, and they wanted to deal with the vagrancy issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think this design and the concepts that we've come up with have focused on that. Pickleball was chosen because it will help reduce the vagrancy because the park would be more active during the day.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We are going to refurb the restrooms that would take care of that problem. The playground will be shaded. And in addition to that, Trevor's working with the county to increase the tree canopy.
Great. I like it.
What is your idea for the now acquired space for the from the volleyball court? Just open green space?
Yeah. I would say green space because when I go by there, I see people using the current green space there a lot. Even
when they were
there's
used.
Stuff going on the field. Yeah.
I just drove by, they had volleyball set up.
Oh, did they?
They did.
It was relatively dense on the
side. But with that said, as a green space, they could continue
they
to do what
do
they
that.
Were doing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe some additional cart parking too there or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And so the fitness, we'll keep the fitness circuit together.
Yes.
I like that.
We can have pickleball courts.
Related bathroom area. Does it have? Assuming we have like water fountains and things like that. We thought about something like water, like a bottle fill station, upgraded.
Yes.
Something simple like that.
Yeah.
Just. Okay.
Yeah.
So yes, that is in the plans. Okay.
It is.
Okay, thank you.
I know at Jarbo, they do have like a small storage building that they're using for, I guess, pickleball related. I don't know what all is in there, but just right by it. And then there's, I guess we'll look at the details, but there's like a little seating place and a little benches and stuff at, what's the other one over in Atlantic Beach?
Dutton.
There you go. That's it.
Is it Dutton?
Yeah.
No, it's
Donner.
No, Donner.
Yeah. Donner. But there are some like little seating areas so people can watch or whatever. So we might need a little green area. There needs to be a little area next to the pickleball courts possibly.
Yeah, and the restrooms will have sufficient space for storage. And
okay. Great. Okay.
Well, maybe to your point, Corey, the shelter, that little shelter, one that would be north of the pickleball court, one of these here.
Yeah. But yeah, some seating or something like along one side of it, so the people that are waiting for the place to sit.
Well, with the elimination of the volleyball.
Yeah. Okay. No, but I love the direction. I think that's going to be fantastic.
Yep.
And the only other thing that I had suggested that I just wanted to bring up is Mr. Goddard looking at anything that could be done with landscaping to help attenuate any of the sound that might, you know, from the pickleball court?
We've talked about that.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's under consideration, I'm sure.
Okay, perfect.
Yes. Thank you.
When do you anticipate breaking ground?
So we're hoping the second quarter of this year, sometime in the summer.
Okay.
Okay. Got a couple other miscellaneous things for you. I'm going to ask Ashley to come back up to the table. At next week's council meeting, Ashley will have an item in front of you for consideration of some restructure within her department. But I wanted her to give you the heads up on it in advance. So this is really an informational for her to talk about the three adjustments she's making within the department. Ashley, it's yours.
So in working with administration and HR, the accounting division of finance, we've kind of recognized the need to make some changes for kind of several reasons. One being we need to develop some redundancies and some critical activities. A lot of times with some functions, we have single person risk. And when we have vacancies or if we have extended absences, it's been a little bit of a challenge to make sure things get done on time. Another reason we're looking to do a restructure is to provide some career path and some growth for some staff so that we can retain some quality employees. And then we have some changing operational needs. What we've recognized with our conversion to Munis, the general ledger converted in 2018, is we're doing things a lot differently now. And so that kind of our needs of our staff have evolved, and we have people that are kind of doing things that are outside the traditional roles of their position. So what we're proposing is to add a second accountant position, and that's kind of to manage the workload and make sure we can stay timely with our deadlines. The second thing we're proposing is to reclassify our internal auditor to be a treasury and a compliance administrator. With the conversion of Munis and the workload, she's taken a lot of treasury activities on, so she's been kind of functioning in that capacity. And the other request we're making is to reclassify our office administrator to be a budget analyst. And this is to kind of help with that single person risk. We've had budget kind of encapsulated to one person with the CFO supporting that. And I think going into the future, we need to have more people engaged in that activity so we have some continuity when we have staff changeover. And our office administrator has been the sole person producing the actual budget book. And she's taken a lot of editing and kind of analytics. She's been growing and taking those on. So we kind of want to recognize that and offer her more growth in that role. And then to offset the cost of that, we have a part-time office assistant that's budgeted in accounting. And that position was added to help support our ERP conversion and to work on some special projects. And so with the addition of a second accountant, that workload can transfer to that person so we can give up that half FTE. So So that's, I think, my two-minute.
What do you think the total financial impact is going to be?
So we costed it out, and looking at on a whole year cycle, we think the additional cost would be $42,000, taking into account the added full-time FTE and the reduction of the part-time FTE.
Is there going to be any significant training required with existing employees with this shift?
I think with our budget, converting the office assistant to the budget analyst, I think sending her to additional training with the Florida Government Finance Officers Association, getting more involved in that and kind of gaining more experience in how to produce the budget document, I would like to be able to afford them that training. FGFOA is very helpful about doing webinars, you know, free webinars, which are very cost effective.
Good.
We wanted to put this all in front of you tonight in advance of next Monday's meeting, so when you see the agenda memo, if you've got questions, you can call Ashley on it with any specifics. It'll be presented to you as a resolution. One of the things we're identifying within the organization is that the office administrator or the office support requirements are changing and are fluid. You know, the days of doing dictation into a microphone and having someone take shorthand for you, and even to some extent, you know, writing letters for you are going by the wayside. So the needs for those administrative services keep getting smaller, but they're not completely gone yet. So, you know, Ashley is one of the first ones to approach us about taking her office administrator and converting into something that's more functional within the department. Human Resources is also asking us to do the same within theirs. Then you've got a department like Information Services that currently has no administrative support. So one of the things Karen and I have been talking about is whether we need to look at adding a part-time administrative support in City Hall to support all of those departments and allow those positions to potentially convert to something else, which is more functional and more needed within those departments. So you may see something in the coming months with regards to that as well. Just wanted to let you know from.
The 0.5 FTE that you discussed transitioning, is that a budgeted FTE, or is there an actual E associated with the FTE? Is there a person in that position? If so, what are the plans for that position?
So that position is vacant. We've been using it for kind of special projects as they came up during the implementation. So there's
no one. So we're not voting somebody out of a job?
No, okay. We're not displacing anyone.
Yeah. Figured I'd ask.
Okay, so that was item number one. Item number two under miscellaneous.
And that's next Tuesday's meeting, right?
Next Tuesday. Good catch.
Good catch.
If you recall, prior to November, Councilmember Stokes was the city's representative towards the Blue Zones. And while the city of Jacksonville Beach, or the beaches, was not selected as one of the target areas, we are still in administration receiving invites to participate on Blue Zone planning within Duval County. I don't know if the council wanted to continue to participate in that, knowing that it does not directly affect the beaches, but if you did, I think it was this body that selected someone or asked for a volunteer last time around. I didn't know if you'd want to do that again and see if anybody wants to be a Blue Zones liaison from the city of Jacksonville Beach.
I took on Chet's economic land use Florida League of Cities role, so
either you guys have interest.
Do we need it? I guess that's the question.
Do we have to agree to that currently until one maybe does a little bit of research as to what exactly we're be agreeing to?
What I will do is I will take this email and I will forward it to the mayor and all council. And if any of you are interested in volunteering for it, you can submit an email in and we'll see if council's all good with it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The third item I have under miscellaneous is with regards to National League of Cities. This jumped up on my radar based on a conversation I had with Councilor Jansen. The city right now is not a member of National League of Cities. We tried to summarize on this sheet what the pros and cons would be of being a member of National League of Cities, but perhaps Councilor Jansen, if you can talk maybe a little bit about the conversation that you had with asking for you to participate with, I think it was the federal strike team.
Right, so the the long and short Reader's Digest was I got tapped on the shoulder at the last Florida League of Cities conference, and the I don't know what her title is, Jeannie's title. I guess she's the director of Florida League of Cities. Somehow got information that I was had a personal relationship with Congressman Rutherford and Senator Bean. And so she approached me and asked if I would be interested in participating in the National League of Cities as a representative from Jacksonville Beach because of the close relationship I have with those two, and being able to bring issues that face the National League of Cities to them directly, and also being part of the federal strike team that the acronym is FAST, for whatever it stands for. And basically, once or twice a year, you fly up to D.C. and you meet with all your constituents and present the issues that the National League of Cities is trying to push forward. That's the long and short of it all.
And I think you'd indicated that through National League of Cities, they look for one point of contact.
Correct.
They want to send multiple people to go on these trips.
Because of the Sunshine. Sunshine Rule. They usually want either one point of contact or one point of contact and somebody from staff, but that's the most they want.
Yeah. So again, we haven't been members of National League of Cities in the past. If you want, you can take some time to digest this one-page summary sheet, and then at our next briefing, if you want, under miscellaneous, we can see if there's a desire for council to become members. And if yes, we'll pay the annual fee and get registered. And if not, that's okay too. So that covers all the topics that I had on the agenda for tonight. Are there any other committee report outs that any of the council members want to report on? Hearing none, are there any thoughts of possible future briefing topics that you'd like to get information on?
I don't have it tonight.
Going once, going twice, going three times. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your participation.